This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from Greensboro, North Carolina. Come along and join me for an in-depth conversation with Greensboro Battleground Park District's Imagineers. Chris Wilson, Assistant City Manager, City of Greensboro, Nasha McCray, Director of Parks and Recreation, and Greensboro Science Center staffers Beth Hemphill, COO, Ron Settle, Director of Innovation, Technology, and Interpretation, Beth Almy, Director of Creative Services, and Martha Register, VP of Education. Come along and tune in for fascinating insights about the past, present, and future projects, including state-of-the-art virtual and augmented reality interpretive experiences at the Science Center. The 400-acre Battleground Park, presently undergoing a major expansion, includes a zoo, an inland aquarium, a giant carousel, and the adjacent Guilford Courthouse National Military Park. This is grand central for the town, isn't it, in some ways?
It absolutely is. You're in Greensboro, North Carolina. More importantly, you're in the Battleground Parks District, soon to become the top destination in Greensboro, North Carolina.
The Battleground is the overarching thematic glue that binds a lot of different destinations here.
It is. As you sit here today, there was a skirmish in this area that helped win the independence of this country. General Greene crippled the British troops so badly that they could barely continue after being in this exact destination. So the Revolutionary War battle that took place here at Guilford Courthouse, we celebrate it here today.
My name is Nasha McCray, and I'm the director for Greensboro's award-winning Parks and Recreation Department. We have a very dynamic agency here in Greensboro. We have over 8,000 acres. Included in the acreage is the Battleground Parks District, and so we're really excited to be a part of that and to be able to push that initiative forward.
Beth?
Yes. Hi, I'm Beth Hemphill, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer here at the Greensboro Science Center. I get to work with a quite talented team made up of all kinds of people that are innovative for us to put on this top destination known as the Greensboro Science Center. We're a museum, zoo, and aquarium. We have a treetop adventure as well, so a little bit for everything.
That sounds cool. And when did the center open up? When was it built?
It originated in 1957. So it was the Junior League and the City of Greensboro that started a little nature center back in those days. And the Junior League operated it for 3 years, and it turned over to the City of Greensboro to operate. City operated it until 1989, and that's when the Natural Science Center of Greensboro, Inc., a nonprofit, was formed to operate the facility.
Nationwide, the Science Center was one of the first, wasn't it? There weren't that many in existence in the early 50s.
This was one of the first public-private relationships of its kind. We unfortunately just didn't have the capacity to run this the way that we saw the full potential. As a matter of fact, I think we may have let a buffalo get loose at one point and run all over Greensboro. So this in fact was one of the first relationships of its kind, and actually has birthed into one of the most unique relationships in the country and has been heralded as such on numerous occasions and in numerous publications.
Interesting. You really are on the cusp of a new iteration, a whole new reinvention of this as a major destination.
We are. To create a destination that has a full experience and a high quality service, you have to look at multiple partners and resources. What's unique about this relationship is you have the federal government, county, state, nonprofit, and city government all working in harmony to create one destination experience for anybody that chooses to come here. And that is highly unique, but it is also a product that is showing an output beyond anything that you will probably get anywhere else in the country. As a matter of fact, when we were researching this, we could not find that relationship anywhere else with the assets that are all in one place.
What I'm hearing and observing is that even though this is very much a Greensboro enterprise, in many respects, it's a state and a regional enterprise and way beyond the boundaries of town. True.
It is true. The facility you're sitting in is in the top 12 tourist attractions in North Carolina. As one consortium, we believe that this will be certainly in the top five within the next couple of years. We have had such an amount of support and attention from the state. We're incredibly happy to have that. But we recognize that we're representing all of North Carolina and really the Southeast.
There really isn't a comparable one-stop facility anywhere in North Carolina or South Carolina, is there?
No, not at all. I cannot think of a facility, and I would challenge anybody to, that'll probably happen now, to come up with that. But think about it. We have a major sports destination, a major attraction in terms of aquarium, zoo, museum. We have a major park facility. We have the first of its kind national park celebrating a Revolutionary War battle. Where would you get that? Nowhere. This is it.
Perfect storm. Okay, Beth, your turn.
Hi, I'm Beth Almy. I'm the Director of Creative Services here at the Greensboro Science Center and very lucky to serve on our center's innovation team, but also work in conjunction with the City of Greensboro's BPD project and sitting on those committees and really kind of helping to bring ideas to the table. We have a lot of great minds that come to the table that consider the kinds of things that people want, and also thinking beyond that for the new ways of learning and the kinds of things that we think that people would really enjoy experiencing here as well as in the parks.
So are you kind of an imagineer to a point?
Kind of, but I'm not the only one. I'm sitting right here next to another, and we try to pull in some people who don't think they're imagineers, but really deep down they are. So we really work at this as a team. I mean, to meet everyone's needs, the needs of our visitors, the needs of our teachers, the needs of our community, and we try to, you know, think even bigger than what they would expect.
Yeah, Tom, my name is Ron Settle. I'm Director of Innovative Technology and Interpretation. I guess that's another way of saying that we use storytelling along with cutting-edge technology to convey the stories that excite and inspire imaginations about science. Beth was mentioning 1957 when the Science Center was formed. I have the distinction of having been born into Greensboro 1 year before the Science Center, and when I was a kid, I came with my brothers to what was here at the time, which was a low brick building with a few snakes in aquarium glass, and it was thrilling for us then. But now to be back on the team, mm-hmm. imagining what we can do in the present and the future, and watching the impact that this facility has on kids today, it's thrilling for me to have that continuity from growing up and being inspired by it, and now working to inspire others with it.
Both you and Beth have a challenge today, and that is that the world is changing so fast from a technological standpoint, from a brain function standpoint, of the young kids growing up, that how you tell the story has radically changed from the days when you first came here, big time.
Yeah, if you take a look at a brand new dinosaur gallery, for example, an old dinosaur gallery would have static murals on the walls, static glass boxes with unmoving stones in the center that were the fossils. And today, the dinosaur gallery we have, the walls are moving with digital imagery that's projected and always changing, environments with dinosaurs moving through them. The fossil cases are pyramids of glass, inside of which you have a fossil, but standing on top of the fossil, moving around the fossil, all within the volume of that case, there appears to be a holographic figure of a paleontologist interpreting all that for you. So rather than bemoaning that the world has changed so rapidly, I think we've reveled in taking on the challenge to use that technology for all the good it can do for science education.
And I think also incorporating art and creating environments that people exist in, you know, in the 360, taking their imagination to a new place really invites them to break down that barrier of science, which to some can be a very academic and intimidating sounding thing, and start to realize that the things that you do to learn other subjects or to observe art or to participate in creative endeavors are often the same ways of thinking about topics in science. And so really creating a space where everybody feels welcome. Also, you know, a creative challenge we have as we're moving towards a future and redesigning our exhibits is to create spaces that are changeable, where the story is changeable, where we can tell stories about our conservation efforts and our keepers that are going out into the world and doing great things beyond our exhibits, but also adapting it for different kinds of learners, whether you have autistic learners, and we can adapt our spaces to be more acclimated to the way they learn. So we're really kind of taking on this challenge and trying to create the best possible, most malleable exhibit to capture the attention, but also address the learning.
That tactical, that engagement, that interactive is really central, isn't it, today?
Well, it really is. And so one of the things that we're working on very hard at present is bringing augmented reality into the mix. So we have a Science Center app, and very soon our visitors are going to be able to load it on their phone or on their tablet, walk up to, say, an animal enclosure, and as they point and look through that magic window of their device, they're going to see a zookeeper appear life-size, walk into the exhibit, and start interpreting that for them. The same is going to be true in the dinosaur gallery. Paleontologists from the past are going to pop up life-size inside the exhibit, mediated through the visitor's own device, and interpret what they're looking at right in front of them. And the great thing about the digital technology is, as Beth was saying, it's malleable. We like to say around here, it's infinitely malleable. So we can change it as much as we want to whatever we want as quickly as we need.
We couldn't imagine this reality 30, 40 years ago. Do you think the kids appreciate how the game has changed?
Oh, they absolutely do. And even when you think that maybe because of familiarity with so much technology, they even at a young age be a little bit jaded and not be impressed, when they stand in front of one of those pyramids of glass with a fossil inside and a paleontologist in miniature popping up three-dimensionally inside that volume, when they first see that, it drops their jaws and you can see the reaction, and it's really wonderful to see. Other AR experiences that we've watched the public using around here just absolutely floor them. We have a live performance animation piece that we do with one of our Red Panda characters here at the Science Center. Drives a submarine up to a big 10-foot window in a reef environment to talk to kids three times a day. And initially the kids think, well, this is a canned cartoon. And suddenly the Red Panda is looking at them and saying, hey, you in the red ball cap on the second row there, what's your name? And strikes up a conversation, because behind the animated character, there's a live actor whose every expression and nuance of performance is being translated immediately to the animated character, and the kids love it, and they're really, truly surprised by it.
You got them.
You have, and, you know, that's where the storytelling comes in. We are wired for stories. Now, we're not necessarily wired to learn reams of facts and be able to recite them, but a story is what we're built to take in and then to transmit. And so when you see new technology as a more humanizing force that allows us just a new way of telling and transmitting and receiving stories. You know, back when the printing press was invented, people really believed and predicted that it would be the death of story, because printed page, what could that do to transmit the tradition that had been going orally for some time? So rather than bemoaning that, oh, people aren't going to be looking at printed text in exhibitry, no, we're celebrating that this is a new kind of printing press that's available now in a way that wasn't possible before. And it's only going to enhance our ability to tell science stories.
That's so cool. I love it. We could talk all day on this one.
Well, I would just say, too, I think it's important. You know, yes, we're meeting the visitors where they are in terms of technology and really taking them to new places with that. But we're also really trying to create spaces that allow them to actively engage and explore, whether that's through play or through kind of this adventure of learning. So as we move forward and we recreate all of our experiences, we want kids to be able to touch things, do things, look for things, explore things. You're still going to have that very active component of learning, but then we're also meeting them in this new place with technology, which is where they are. It's where they are, where they're, you know, and learning. And some of us who have been to lots of old school museums, we still, there are very valuable things about that. So we're trying to marry all of that and really bring the best of the best to what we do here.
And the other thing that we integrate together are the different branches of the sciences. You know, nature doesn't segment them and sequester them separately. So you go to a dinosaur gallery And before you know it, you're finding out something about space and about objects deep out in the cosmos that profoundly affect the history of life on Earth. Or the other evening, we had a number of people who were here at the center for a laser show that we have in our planetarium. As they emerged from that, we had a big telescope set up with a video camera connected to it that actually shows live video images in full color with great structural detail, spiral arms of galaxies, nebulas where stars are being born and remnants where some have died. And when they walk out of the laser experience and now they're looking at the universe live, they're absolutely astonished that they thought the light show was over. And no, it's not at all. And Friday night when we had this occasion, a couple of parents said, "We recognize you from the dinosaur shows. Our kid is back home and loves those shows. He's going to want to know why in the world you're here with a telescope. So can we record you telling why you're here with a telescope?" And we did. And we talked about that connection between life on Earth and that galaxy 28 million light years away that the folks were viewing. And it's just an astonishing opportunity to blend and bring together, as they ought to be, all the various facets and disciplines of science.
Talk to us about community engagement, school groups.
Well, one of the things between both the Science Center and Greensboro Parks and Recreation that I think is our bread and butter is the way that we do engage and impact and interact with the community. We're very detailed in terms of the way that we're deliberate in developing partnerships, and one of our strongest partnerships is with Guilford County Schools. And so in terms of field trips, different school groups that do visit the Science Center, as well as internships, externship opportunities, in our department with Greensboro Parks and Recreation, we have that same type of relationship, and I think that is our way of creating that pipeline, not only in terms of the exposure to different types of opportunities, learning opportunities through environmental education, health and wellness, recreation, science, and history, but also just creating that pipeline in terms of possible future careers and the next generation of leaders that could be impactful in these particular areas.
Do you guys have formal brainstorming sessions with educators, with teachers?
I think maybe the best example that I give when I'm talking to other groups is we understand something that not everybody does. This group in particular gets it. So when I was a kid, my teachers were so frustrated with me. I was that kid.
I wonder why.
Well, because I'm a pain in the butt. But I would look out the window, and there was always this notion of he has all this great potential. And it frustrated me to no end. But all he does is look out the window. Nobody asked, why was I looking out the window? Had they asked, they know what I was looking at. I was looking at the tree, and I was looking at the spider hanging from it, and I wanted to know how that worked and why it did what it did and how those things connected. Here, we understand that. We understand. We've got these great assets that, upon first sight, are a draw. Who wouldn't want to look at that? But we understand behind that there's a science and a story that could, in fact, as Nasha says, spur great leaders, future leaders, someone who could, in fact, take that simple thing of looking out the window and develop the next vaccine or the next mode of travel. That's what this facility does so well. And so when we bring people together to talk through that, that's the basis of the conversation is, how do we get them to look, and then how do we get them to thirst for more? And I think that's the key to this whole facility.
You're absolutely right. I think at the end of the day, it's about being transformational and creating those transformational experiences through storytelling, through the visualization of it being present in that moment, and then being able to explore the potential of what it could be going forward and being able to reimagine all of those things. And that's what we do really well here, and being fortunate to be a part of this larger team to push that forward and be a part of that is really exciting. And I know for our department and for the city in particular, having that support, from our elected officials and even from our community, community, whether it be for supporting funding for us to be able to push this plan forward, is really, really reassuring. And it's comforting to know that we're trusted as stewards to be able to, you know, to do that. So I definitely think at the end of the day, it's really about creating those transformational experiences that people remember. You know, you can open a book and you can watch a program, you can listen to the radio and get that real-time information, but to be in that moment and then you can look back on that years later and you're remembering your experience, that's what brings true value to a project such as the Battleground Parks District.
We call those moments of magic. And we talk about it a lot in our guest service training. That's what the center wants to do, and that's what we want to help accomplish with BPD as well. But that's the important thing, to spark that curiosity and have those children grow up to become doctors. We've had several come back to the center and tell us how they started with us as a volunteer, they came as a kid, and now they are a medical physician. It's great.
And I would like to add, we're under no delusion that every kid who comes through here is going to be a physicist or a chemist. But in a society like ours, where increasingly the decisions that have to be made need to be informed by science and technology and an understanding of the ecology of the world that we share, we do a service to the community to make all of these opportunities available, even if a kid never gets near a science vocation. Being a good citizen today is really aided by an appreciation of science through the kinds of experiences that we offer, so that any occupation they might have, just to be a more fully developed person and to be a better citizen, it's all aided by an appreciation of science that we help to convey.
And I would also say, on the day we opened our renovated dinosaur gallery, I was standing near a mother and child, and the mother turned to the child and said, "I was here on the day that they opened their first dinosaur gallery, and it was really important for me to bring you today when they opened this one, and isn't it amazing?" And I think it's important to remember that while a lot of people are out here to learn, people are also having important, real family experiences out here. And they have them here, and they have them in the park, and so we're not just building magic moments and moments of, you know, learning, but memories as well.
One thing I think we haven't really put together is the overarching breadth of one-stop shopping for a multiplicity of experiences here. The National Park Service, the carousel you're talking about.
So think about your family. Family can be a makeup of many different people, many different interests, right? What does any family want to do? You want to go outside, you want to play. You want to see things. You want to be excited. You want to be interested. You want to be engaged. I know when my two kids were small, I wanted them to be entertained. You can do all that in one place. You can play. You can learn. You can be interested. You can be excited. And you can do it all day. I think that is an experience that I can't say I've had everywhere. I don't know that I can walk from an aquarium with a giant octopus down the hill to ride a pedal boat that looks like a dragon anywhere.
I thought you wanted the swan.
I do love the swan. You're giving away my secrets. Luckily, this is a podcast, and the picture won't show that. But I do love that. I do love that swan. I think that's pretty unique. And then I can hang a right and go learn about the very battle that helped win our independence. Nowhere else can you do this. So I think what we're offering here is far beyond just a community experience, although we're very excited about that. We're offering an experience for anyone nationwide, globally, to come do something that they can't do anywhere else. And we're extremely proud of that, and that's why we're so excited about this plan.
The carousel. It's a brand new one?
All the pieces inside are hand-carved. But it is the largest carousel in the Southeast. It is absolutely amazing. And the really cool, unique thing about this carousel is it represents everything you'll see in the Battleground Parks District and the very history of Greensboro itself. So, yet again, you'll learn while you have fun.
So one of the experiences, or actually multiple experiences we have here at the Science Center, are our behind the scenes experiences. We have zoo trek experiences, we have aquarium adventure experiences, and penguin encounter experiences. Opportunities for people to kind of go behind, see the kitchen, see how we prepare food, see how the keepers take care of the animals, and learn more about the stories of conservation that take place here and beyond. It is a whole other level of magic moment that happens for someone when they get a chance to see a penguin up close or hear an otter up close, or even take part in, you know, helping to prepare and, you know, carry out a snack for one of the animals in the zoo. It's amazing, and it's something that you really can't experience through the glass, but we really love those experiences and opportunities here at the Science Center.
I'm Martha Register. I'm the VP of Education here at the Greensboro Science Center. And we have just stepped into the Wiseman Aquarium, where we introduce people slowly to the world of water, starting with a cat that fishes for his living. This is the Asian fishing cat. And our goal with the aquarium and the zoo is to really bring people closer to animals in a meaningful connection.
You have some kids over there.
We always have a lot of kids, and it's usually a happy, noisy crowd sound. School is back in session, and we're in the main galleries. We're going to step behind the gallery space and visit with some of our more audible residents. I think you can pick this up over otter screaming, can't you?
Yeah.
Okay. The Asian small-clawed otters in our backup area right now, and two more on exhibit. But in backup, they go through training sessions and enrichment toys, and they're getting a snack right now. So let me introduce three of our otters to you. Asian small-clawed otters are the smallest kind of otter in the world. They're also the noisiest. They have more vocal patterns than any other kind of otter. And you can see at this moment, they also have paws wet, not so much webbed for swimming as really finger-like. And right now they're chowing down on lettuce. They have a variety of food options here. They're also going to get a little bit of kibble to snack on. And you can see their teeth. You can probably smell them a little bit. They are in the otters are in the skunk family. All of those are weasels. And they are quite proud of that. So the first thing they do when they go back and forth between exhibits is to scent mark their area. So we're going to see how they like some kibble. That's otter for yes, please. They are very cute, but they're also part of an important mission here at the Greensboro Science Center. These animals are part of an SSP, a species survival plan, which places them and their kind in a breeding program in zoos and aquariums across the country so that we can know what those genetics are to make sure they survive here. We have breeding programs set up. It's sort of like a nationwide matchmaking service to make sure that they're not inbred, that they have a healthy population with us.
Very good.
They're also part of a behind-the-scenes program where we do take visitors back here. It's part of our up-close and personal connections with some of the animals that we do have. So you're not the only one who gets to see this, but it is a special adventure.
On our way to the dinosaur gallery, this is children's play area. It's themed as an undersea adventure. There's a sunken ship here. You can stand along the railing and wiggle your fingers over the railing of the sunken ship, and you're controlling schools of fish on the walls around you that follow your fingertip motion. At the end of this area is the big 10-foot screen where our red panda undersea explorer brings his submarine three times a day and talks to kids, live action, live performance animation. For 100 feet running over our heads are projections from our shark reef tank in the aquarium. And we peel over to the right, and we are moving toward dinosaur down our hallway, our planetarium, our dome theater. We have 86 seats. It's both full dome projection for astronomy programs It's 3D projection in the front part of the dome for those kinds of nature films. And then we have laser capability as well. So we have laser shows once a month in the evenings, and we have laser shows also right at the beginning of each of our other feature presentations during the day. Now, this is one of the entries into our Prehistoric Passages, Realm of Dragons, Dinosaur exhibit. We're using a lot of new technology here. Here's one of our pyramids of glass with a 3D paleontologist right now perilously hanging over a chomping Allosaurus. But the bones in the center of each of these pyramids of glass are interpreted by the presence of the paleontologist moving throughout and around them. Right now we have the sound turned down. It's focused sound, but when you walk through explaining the way I am now, it can amp up the level of the volume a little bit too much. We also have these cases that have glass fronts, which are actually LED screens. They're completely transparent until we choose to put something opaque on them, so you can see the fossils inside without any problem at all. But then we can overlay text or animations or still photos or videos to help interpret what's inside. It's a far cry from the old small printed label next to the object. It really gives you a much livelier sense of what you're trying to interpret. And in the main part of Prehistoric Passages, we have a number of those pyramids of glass. Each of these areas is like a little stage to interpret and to tell a story. So here we have some fossils from Triceratops, and the story that's being told as the paleontologist is riding on a bison. And if you slip over to the side, you can take a look and see that the figures appear three-dimensional inside the space. So as you look around, you see we're projecting 360 degrees all the way around to use this as a moving mural, a canvas populating prehistoric environments with dinosaurs moving through them. And up on the stage, we have a life-size T-Rex replica that we pretty soon are going to be using as a live performance area. So in the same way we make paleontologists appear to move among the fossils in these pyramidal cases, we're going to have that same sort of material under the body of the T-Rex. We'll have a live presenter standing right there on stage with the T-Rex, and out of thin air, paleontologists from the past will materialize, life-size, stand beside the live presenter and have a conversation about all of their discoveries. So right next to T-Rex, you're going to have Barnum Brown, who discovered the first fossil T-Rex in 1903, and on and on and on. Additional paleontologists chiming in and telling the story, and chiming in the background behind him now, we have one of our animated T-Rexes moving around the room. So during that live performance in here, not only will you have all the action on the stage, but we'll use this whole 360-degree projection environment to interpret the end of the age of the dinosaurs with the impact of the asteroid that took them out. So we'll be ending the world at least three times a day right here in this space.
That's really cool.
Kids love to do this. Adults love to do this. They get to stand in this spot as life-size dinosaurs move all around them.
So what happens here now?
Yeah, so as you stand here, it's our prehistoric petting zoo, and the dinosaurs move all around you. And the kids love it because they love to reach out and try to pet or stroke on the back the dinosaurs or other flying or swimming reptiles who come by.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.